surgery. By the way, what's the percentage of like archery like composed of?
I think I've talked about that in the first lecture. The exam and the exam and homework are equivalent. And I think I'm going to give a take-home thing later, which will count like an exam. But the homework will be just as important as an exam. And I'm still thinking about I'm thinking about maybe having a take-home final kind of thing rather than a sit-down one. Because it's hard to come up with reasonable problems that you can do with a gun at your back like that. Any questions about anything? Well, I thought the exam went okay. I want to review a little bit what I did last time before I get going today. So remember, Fourier series were for periodic functions. And what I did to invent a Fourier integral last time is I let that period get gigantic. So I want to take a little bump function, f of x there, and I'm going to think of this thing. I can make it periodic, but I can make the period gigantic. So the period of that would be 2L, and I'd repeat it. And then I'm going to let L get bigger and bigger and leave f just that little bump. Okay, so I wrote the Fourier coefficients are this. Notice that the A naught Fourier coefficient goes to 0, because I divide by 2L. And this integral is just the area under that little bump. So that A naught term is going to go away. And then the Fourier coefficients are the usual thing. Let's see, I think I corrected this when I put the notes online. It's 1 over L, and then it's n pi t over L. Notice those frequencies when L is big are L's big, so that would be, some of those frequencies would be small until the n gets big. And the bn's would be the sine functions. Then I wrote out the Fourier series for f. F is nice and smooth, so the Fourier series converges to it. This is the constant a naught term that's going to go away. It goes to 0. But I stared at this thing for a while and realized, this looks like an integral in the x variable. If I let wn be n pi over l, then that's an integral along the x-axis starting at 0 and having little intervals of pi over l, which are very small. So 1, 2, 3, all the way out to n equals infinity. And this function, this has an n pi over l over here. So if my wn's are going to be n pi over l in the x variable, I can put those wn's in here. And when you stare, let's see, this integral, f is that little bump. So this integral is just an integral over that little bump. So if l goes to infinity, this just stays the integral from minus infinity to infinity of this nicely compactly supported little bump thing. So I can let this L go to infinity. And if I'm going to have a Riemann integral, I need a delta x function. And the delta x would be pi over L, which I have right here in front of the integral. So I'll put a pi here and a 1 over pi out in front. Okay, so there's my Riemann sum. Those are my Wn's. And so I'm rewriting it now.
My Wn's were that n pi over L. And I pulled my delta x, my delta w out and stuck it at the edge here. And x is just a number sitting there. That x matches this x, so it's going to float. And I might as well make that L go to infinity because this thing is just a little bump. And here's that's a Riemann sum. An integral with respect to the w variable, where this is the a of w. And you can make this sense out of this, you need to know that this thing goes to 0 as w goes to infinity. And guess what that is? It's the Riemann-Lebesgue lemma.
because as this wiggles more and more, the cosine wiggling does a lot of canceling. So if I wanted to make a proof out of this, which I will someday, but not today, knowing that this function of w goes to 0 at infinity makes this Riemann sum converge nicely. And so if I call this function a of w, I'm summing up a of wn times cosine wn times delta w. And of course, there would be a very similar sign thing. And so I get this formula for the, it's called the Fourier integral. I've expanded f as a Fourier integral. And if you think of this, I'm summing over all frequencies of cosine wt as w ranges over all frequencies. So that's just a recap of what I did last time. And now I wanted to show you that, let's see, what did I do? I calculated these integrals for that function. It's a step function. It goes from minus 1 to 1. And I got that that's an even function. And I got this formula for the a of w function. And the b function was 0. So what I got was a formula that f is supposed to be equal to this Fourier integral. That was the a of w that I got. And now I want to show you that it really does do what I said it was going to do. I have a maple demo ready to go here. There it is. So you can't... I'm going to let... I'm going to define u in that top line. So u colon equal, that means it's defined to be the function that takes x comma b to that integral. That's the integral I got when I calculated the Fourier integral. And I'm going to take the integral to go from w equals 0 to b. Okay, so that defines the function. I just push return. That's the thing that's supposed to be equal to that step function f. And now I'm going to plot it and let that... I'm going to integrate out to 20, which is pretty far. After you get past there, this stuff at the bottom is pretty small. I get a 20 in the denominator there. So let's see what the plot would give me. Integral from 0 to b. Yeah, let's plot it. I just push return. Keep really thinking that long. There it is. Funny, you've seen a picture like that before doing Fourier series. It's like the Gibbs phenomenon. It overshoots the jump by 9% about at the places where there's a jump. And at the rest of the places, it converges nicely to the function. Okay. That was taking the integral, instead of going from 0 to infinity, going from 0 to 20. So it really does what we think it does. Let me go to 30 and see what I get. Might take it longer. That gets closer. But there's still the Gibbs phenomenon. And so notice at the midpoint of the jump, it's a half at the midpoint. But it overshoots by the Gibbs phenomenon. And it gets closer and closer at the smooth spots. So we can expect that it behaves very much like Fourier series. And when you think about Fourier series, you're adding frequencies. And the more frequencies you add, the closer you get to the function. That's like this integral here. I'm adding up wiggling cosine terms. And the more I add up, the closer I get. And going to infinity in this problem is letting b get bigger and bigger. So I'm using more and more frequencies. The more I use, the closer I get. But I need all frequencies to get close. By the way, you can ask Maple to do things that it can't do. Let me ask it to try to calculate this integral. When it can't do something, it just
spits it back out at you. Let's see. It's funny what Maple knows. For example, if I integrate the cosine of W over W, and I can let W go from 0 to infinity. That's what that is. So Maple knows how to do that integral. But if I let it go from 0 to something, it wouldn't know how to do that. Oh, well, that's a famous function that it calls SI. It's SI of 4. It's the area under the sine function. So apparently Maple, it didn't always have a name for that function, but now it does. And by the way, if you're in engineering and wanted these calculations to huge orders of accuracy, I can set the number of digits Maple deals with to, say, 50. And then if you want to evaluate as a floating point number pi, there's pi to 50 places. And it can calculate integrals like this to any accuracy you like. So these formulas I'm getting are useful, and you can use them to any degree of accuracy you want. But of course, you're always stuck with things like Gibbs phenomenon that you can't do anything about. Questions about Maple? I just wanted to show you those graphs because they're famous graphs, and they lend credence to the formulas I'm going to show you. Eventually, I'm going to demonstrate the formulas, but to begin with, I'm just going to use them kind of in a formal way, just to see what they're good for and why people study them. Questions about that? Let's see, I wanted to do a couple of calculations that are kind of neat. Let's calculate. Remember, I had the Fourier cosine transform and the Fourier sine transform. I want to calculate the Fourier cosine transform of e to the minus 2x, a basic exponential function. All right, so remember the Fourier cosine transform was gotten by step one was to extend the function as an even function. Extend e to the minus 2x as an even function to the real line. So the picture would be e to the minus 2x, let's see, at 0 it's 1, and then it fizzles out real fast. So that's e to the minus 2x, and I would extend it as an even function over here. And then the Fourier cosine, the A function, it's just the A of W. A of W was equal to 1 over pi, the integral from minus infinity to infinity of f of t cosine wt dt. And because this thing is even, this is 2 over pi integral from 0 to infinity e to the minus 2t cosine wt dt. And you've probably seen, if you studied ordinary differential equations, this
is a Laplace transform.
So remember the Laplace transform. Was the Laplace transform of f of x, I guess I'll call it f of t, is a function of s, and it's the integral from 0 to infinity of e to the minus st f of t dt.
And so if you look at this and look at this, the function is the cosine wt, think of w as a constant, and the s is the is 2.
So that's the Laplace transform of the cosine function. If you studied Laplace transforms, the Laplace transform of cosine is s over s squared plus w squared. And so this thing, if I go back and look at it, is 2 over pi. Let's see, the s is 2 over 2 squared plus w squared. And so that's the, if I were to now expand that twice, so let's see, I got my AW. It's going to be 4 over pi times 1 over 4 plus W squared. And remember, the B term would be equal to 0 because it's even. And my original function now, f of x, would be the integral from 0 to infinity of a of w cosine wx dw. And for x bigger than 0, that gives us e to the minus 2x is equal to the integral from 0 to infinity of this thing I just calculated, 4 over pi 1 over 4 plus w squared cosine wx dx.
So I've expanded this exponential function as a sum of wiggling cosine terms. And these are the weights you would add each cosine term in. And the bigger the w is, the more that wiggles.
Okay. By the way, there's another way to calculate this. If you don't remember your Laplace transforms, here's alternatively. So remember, I came up with these rules about Fourier cosine transforms last time. Alternatively, we know that if you take the Laplace transform, the cosine transform, rather, of f double prime, you get minus w squared times the cosine transform of f minus the square root of 2 over pi times f prime at 0. That's, you got that by integrating by parts twice. In this problem, I had an e to the minus 2x. So why don't I let, I won't, let's let a, let's, I won't use 2, I'll use a. Let's let f of x be equal to e to the minus ax. And let's see, f prime of x would be equal to minus a e to the minus ax, and f double prime of x would be equal to minus, that'd be plus a squared e to the minus ax.
I need an f prime of 0 in the formula above, so let's see, f prime of 0 is equal to minus a. And if I plug that into that formula for the cosine transform of f double prime, I get, let's see, that's a squared e to the minus ax equals minus w squared cosine transform of e to the minus ax plus a times the square root of 2 over pi.
And this is a linear operator, so I can pull this a squared out and solve for the cosine transform.
So let's see, when I do that, I would get the Fourier cosine transform of e to the minus ax. Let's see, where should I put everything? I've got an a squared I can pull out here.
When I put this over on the other side, I'd get a plus w squared.
And then I get a times the square root of 2 over pi. And so, finally, I get the Fourier cosine transform of the thing I want.
So I could do that instead of using the Laplace transform. So if you're going to be do engineering and use these things, you'll find there's books of tables, just like Laplace transform tables. The basic functions you run into in everyday life, like exponentials, sines, and cosines, those transforms are very computable. And there's gobs of, in fact, Maple can do it for you.
Okay, so I wanted to show you what people use these things for. Let's do an application to the hot... This is going to be the hot wire problem, except it's going to be an infinitely long hot wire. Hot wire. And so my wire is going to go from 0 to infinity. There's a hot wire. And my original temperature, I think I'm going to take a temperature that will be 1 degree between 1 and 2 and 0 everywhere else. So my temperature is going to be, at 1, it turns on, and at 2, it turns off.
So you can think of this, I'm keeping it at 0 degrees, but I heat it up from 1 to 2. And at time equals 0, I yank off my heater. And then I want to see what it does after that. So I regulate the temperature to look like that. This is my original temperature in the wire. So this is U of X at time 0. That's the initial condition.
And then the heat problem would satisfy the heat equation. So the heat equation is du dx dx equals du dt. And there'd be a constant in there, but
that would just depend on the properties of the wire. I'll take the constant to be 1 to make life easier. And let's see, the boundary condition for this problem, there's only one boundary, namely the zero end of the wire. I'm going to keep that end refrigerated.
So the boundary condition I'm going to hold the left end equal to 0 degrees for all time.
So I like to think of that as a homogeneous refrigerated boundary condition. Well, you could try the cosine transform and you realize it was the wrong choice to make. Remember, there was two formulas for the transforms, and the one that
the one important one that made the Fourier sine transform work was that the Fourier sine transform of a function double prime was equal to minus w squared times the Fourier sine transform of f minus 2 over the square root of pi times f of 0. Is that what it is? I keep forgetting these darn things. F sine. No, it's a plus. Note, remember the Fourier cosine one had an f, a minus f prime here. And the prime there is a bummer. That's going to screw it up. If I use the Fourier cosine transform, the prime right there is going to botch it up for us. It's because the boundary condition is involving the function at zero rather than the derivative at zero. The sine transform is the right one to pick. If we had insulated ends, the cosine one would be the one to use. Okay, so let's do this now. So the big idea, so this is the important formula. By the way, in order for that formula to be true, remember I did integration by parts. And it was important that the function go to zero at infinity. If you've only got a little bit of hot heat in a wire and it starts spreading out, you can bet that the temperature is going to be zero at infinity, or go to zero at infinity. So physically, the condition we needed to do this, to show this formula, namely that f goes to zero at infinity, I have that in this physical situation. Because I can't heat up the whole universe with a little bit of heat on my end of the wire. So that's just... Okay, so the big idea is to apply the Fourier transform, sine transform, in the space variable. Okay, so let's write u hat w of t is going to be the square root of 2 over pi, this is the Fourier sine transform, integral from 0 to infinity. The function is the space variable. And then I take sine wx dx. So this t is just floating along like a parameter, and the function I'm applying the transform to is u of x. And I get a new function that way, which is a function of w. And the neat thing is that when I take derivatives in the x variable twice, that turns into multiplication. Let's see, there's one important step I need to mention. I can take d by dt underneath that integral sign. Oops. Let's just do that. Let's see, when I do that, I would get du hat dt is square root of 2 over pi integral from 0 to infinity du dt xt sine wx dx. And that's equal to the Fourier sine transform of du dt. In the space variable. But that's supposed to be equal to the second derivative, d2ud x squared.
if it satisfies the heat equation, du dt is equal to
the second derivative here in the space variable. And remember, the Fourier sine transform takes second derivatives and spits out minus w squared, the Fourier sine transform of u in the space variable. That's plus 2 over pi, and here's an important thing, u of 0 at t.
That's the homogeneous boundary condition, that's 0. So that's going to go away.
And that's why I chose the the sine transform, because I want that to go away. That's the boundary condition. So that goes away, and look what I have here. This thing is my u hat by definition. And I have a very simple partial differential equation in u hat now. Let's see. It started out on the left with du hat dt equals minus w squared u. Du hat dt equals minus w squared u hat. That's an easy differential equation to solve. Let's see, how would I do it? T is just floating along like a parameter. And you know how to sub, this looks like population, exponential decay, radioactive decay. This is like a minus k times u. So we know the solution is, it's e to the minus w squared t. So this is an ODE with a parameter floating along. So think W equal constant. Then when you solve this, you get U is equal to, let's see, E to the minus W squared T.
But this C might be different for different Ws.
So for
when W is held constant, you get a constant here. And when you take W to be a different constant, you might get a different constant there.
C of W might be different for different Ws.
But now I'm getting close to a solution now. Remember, I can undo the Fourier sine transform by just doing it twice in a row.
And
notice I turned my differential equation into algebra. My differential equation then is multiply by w squared instead of differentiate. That's algebra.
Okay, so let's undo it now. Let's see, I actually can find what C of W is. Notice if I stick in time equals 0,
it tells me that C of W is U hat.
With a 0 stuck in. So, let's plug in T equals 0 and see what we get. I get that u hat of w at time equals 0 equals c of w. And u hat at time equals 0 is the Fourier transform of the function I'm dealing with. This is square root of 2 over pi integral from 0 to infinity of my function, my original function. Did I write it out? Maybe I didn't call that an f. F of x What did I write? I gotta go back and look at what I called this thing in the beginning.
There's my transform. I'm taking the sine transform in the x variable. At time t equals 0, this is my original temperature distribution. Right. And so I'm going to write that out.
I'll call that f of t, or f of x rather. That's my original temperature distribution. Times sine wx dx.
That's the Fourier sine transform of my original temperature distribution.
And let's write that out. That's going to be the square root of 2 over pi times the integral from 1 to 2 of sine wx dx.
Because remember, that function was 1 degree between 1 and 2.
And that's an easy integral to crank out. That'll be square root of 2 over pi times, let's see, antiderivative of sine is minus 1 over w cosine, evaluated between x equal 1 and x equal 2. Maybe I should write wx as x goes from 1 to 2. So let's see, that's equal to square root of 2 over pi cosine w minus cosine 2w over w. That looks like it's nasty at w equals 0, but it's not. These things on the top are vanish at w equals 0. So L'Hopital's rule would tell you that's actually, it's nice. In fact, it goes to 0 at w equals 0. And that's my C of W function. And that's the last thing that was missing in my formula. So now I have that U hat of WT is that C of W. I just figured out what the C of W was, E to the minus W squared T. And I remember the great thing about the Fourier sine transform. If you do it twice in a row, you get your function back. So the last step, hit it again with the Fourier sine transform to undo the Fourier sine transform. Okay, so when I undo it, I get that u of xt is going to be the Fourier sine transform of that thing. So let me tell you what you get when you write it out. You get square root of 2 over pi, and then you would get an integral from 0 to infinity. I'm going to recopy that thing up there, the square root of 2 over pi cosine w minus cosine 2w over w times e to the minus w squared x, a t rather, sine wx. That's the only place x appears, dw. That's a formula for the answer, and it's a correct formula. So I kind of did formal things to calculate this thing, but now that I have this formula, you can verify that, yes, this is an actual solution to this problem. So it's kind of like the Bernoulli thing. I did all that formal stuff and was playing around. In the end, I got something that was a valid formula, and it was the same as the D'Alembert solution. This is the formula, and I can check that the integral converges nicely, and it actually solves the problem. I could clean it up a little bit, but who cares how clean it looks. And I could actually
I can make a beautiful animation using maple and show you how this the temperature sort of gets sucked out of that thing real fast. An interesting thing, you know, that thing has a jump there right away. Real instantly, that jump smooths out. That's a property of temperature flow. It doesn't like jumps, and it would those jumps would dissipate, and they'd smooth out real quick. And then that hump, the little bump there, would flatten out and spread out, and you'd see the heat oozing off to the right. Interesting thing, it's not zero far out. So that heat, you think of the heat, you think of heat maybe not being able to travel at the speed of light, but whammo, a little bit of heat sneaks out infinitely far away real quick. It's not like a wave problem where you disturb the universe here and that the waves propagate at the speed of light and head out far away. Heat's different. It doesn't have that property. So until that wave of light gets someplace, nobody can detect it. It would be zero out in the vacuum of space. Heat problems are different.
Let's see, how many more minutes do I have here? Okay, I just wanted to show you what this stuff is for. I've been writing this in kind of an old-fashioned way, mainly in terms of real cosine and sine. We're going to be dealing with the complex version of these things, which are considerably easier to write. So the complex version of the Fourier integral is what we're going to deal with. So we do the same routine as I did in the beginning, writing out a complex Fourier series and using the formulas for the coefficients and playing exactly the same game of making it a Riemann integral. So I'd repeat. The Riemann integral trick. Using f of x would be a sum from minus infinity to infinity of the complex coefficients e to the inx.
And I'd write out integrals for these cn's and approximate them by a Riemann integral.
Today. I think I'm going to save that for next time. Let's see. Yeah, I'm going to save that for next time. Seems like enough formulas for one day.
Did I give everybody's paper up here? Any last minute questions about anything?
Or about the homework? That one problem, number 18, did people have trouble with that one? Where you're supposed to come up with a series that I had trouble with that one. It took me a while to figure out.
He gave a great hint to take a subsequence, but the important thing in taking that hint was to note, realize you needed to leave a lot of the coefficients to be zero. So you'd have a Fourier series with coefficients, and you'd have that subsequence which is summable, and you throw away all the other terms except the ones in the summable subsequence. Because it's summable, that would converge uniformly by the Weierstrass-M test. And so it would converge to a function with Fourier coefficients. And you'd have a lot of zeros in spots, and every now and then you'd have an epsilon nk in your subsequence. And then zeros again for a while. And so you'd have infinitely many that pop up and are not zero and are in that sequence that way.
Yeah, but the problem is you have to show the existence of such functions. So how do you construct that function?
The subsequence?
No, the you have to show that such function exists. So
I would just take those Fourier, I would take those for to be the Fourier coefficients. I'd throw out the ones that not in my subsequence and make them be zero.
You can do that.
You can do that. Yeah, anyway, it struck me that I had to sit around and think about that for a while because this hint seemed like, oh yeah, that's going to work. But then the key to making it work was to leave the coefficients in being zero. So the ones that were, they were still far out in the sequence and not zero. That was the key. Anyway, that's the only one I didn't give you a big hint about, I think. Okay, that feels like enough for today.
I will.